What's up, fools? I had to come correct with my opening today. I got to tell you for a couple of reasons. The first of which is I did this Tesla podcast yesterday about autopilot. I don't know what happened. It was like Jerry Maguire when he says, like, I had two slices of bad pizza and a Heineken, and all of a sudden I grew a conscience. And that's how I felt last night. You know, it was the end of the night, and I started reading this article about this Tesla crashing into a police cruiser on autopilot, and I started thinking to myself, man, this is fucking crazy. People's lives are being put at risk. And so instead of just waiting and thinking it through thoroughly and doing a podcast today about it, I decided to jump on the computer and do a podcast last night, which led to the very sober and somber sounding podcast I did last night. You know, hello, this is Chris Irons, also known as Quote the Raven. Jesus. I don't think I'm ever going to put you guys through that again. I listened to the whole thing again today. I was like, shit, I can't even listen to 2 minutes of this. And the fucked up thing is I was making really good points, too. But I just, there's no energy in my voice, and I just sound like I'm falling asleep because I was, in fact, falling asleep. So I figured I would open this podcast and come correct at least a little bit, even though I know that there's one guy out there right now who's tuning into this podcast for the first time today. Because he was browsing the iTunes podcasts and he went to business and then he clicked on the subcategory investing and I'm in there somewhere, you know, thinking to himself, oh, Quote the Raven, this is interesting. I've never heard of that before, you know. He clicked on his first Quote the Raven podcast today and he gets, boom, what's up, fools? Proper introduction like that. Probably thinking to himself right now, this is outrageous. This is absolutely outrageous behavior. I would never listen to a podcast like this. This is just a complete disgrace to the financial industry. I can't listen. And if you're listening right now and you've listened to the podcast before, or at least if you came into it with an open mind, I got to let you know, there's one person listening right now. I guarantee you there's one, because I've been getting a couple thousand people that listen, so it's got to be law of averages. Has to be law of averages that there's one person listening right now that this is absolutely outrageous behavior. I would never listen to this. And you know what? I'll go one further. People that take financial advice, people that listen to things involving finance from a guy like this, okay, they deserve to do very poorly. This is the same kind of guy that diligently replaces all of his divots in the golf course, too. Par 3, 150 yards, tees off with a 6-iron. Ball drops on the green. The guy's probably 3 feet from the hole. Instead of worrying about how great of a shot he just made, is in a rush to go pull up his divot in the green. And if you don't replace the grass the right way, other golfers may have trouble. If they hit your divot while they're trying to putt, it could affect the trajectory of the ball. Listen, motherfucker, it's called groundskeepers, okay? They get paid for a reason. That's their job. Their job is to keep the grounds. People always telling me, oh, did you rake out your spot in the bunker where you hit the ball? Fuck no, I didn't rake out my spot. What do I look like, a professional landscaper? I'm not raking out anything. This is like the biggest scam in history, by the way. This isn't what the podcast is about. But for those of you that have been listening for a little while, you know I may have a tendency to go off on a tangent. This is like the biggest scam in history. Like, it's not bad enough that I'm the world's worst golfer to begin with. That when I put the ball into the bunker, I need to have somebody say to me, hey, did you rake out your spot? No, I play on a municipal course, okay? My ball is sitting in a bed of geese shit, wherever it is anyways to begin with. You're worried about me raking out the sand traps? What do you want me to do when I put a ball into the woods? You want me to go in there, start chopping down trees? Clearing a path for people that need to walk into the woods? Hey, I hit the ball in the woods, guys. I'm going to drop one here. Oh, that's fine, but did you trim the hedges on your way in and cut down some of the older trees? There was some brush on the pathway. Like I'm walking around with a full landscaping kit while I'm playing golf. I hit this one on the fairway. Great. Did you mow the lawn while you were out there? Because it's a courtesy to other golf players. Could you just mow the fairway while you're out there? This way it stays nice and low to the ground for other golf players. It's like, shit. Here I am thinking I'm getting away from work to go golf for a little while. And it turns out I've been a landscaper the whole time. I didn't even fucking know about it. This is incredible. This is incredible. I got to rake out the sand traps. I got to mow the lawn. I got to cut down the branches in the woods. I got to replace the divots. I got to start pulling up dirt. I got to get on my hands and knees. It's just crazy. I want to like the game. I'm already wearing a polo shirt, which for me, it's like wearing a tuxedo. If you're used to wearing polo shirts, if you wear one to work every day, try putting on a tuxedo next time you go to the golf course. Let me know how you feel. That's how I feel when I'm in a polo shirt. And then when you get a nice tux that fits you real well, go grab a spade shovel and a dirt rake and do some light landscaping around the green in your tuxedo. Let me know how that feels, because that's exactly how I feel when I golf. Oh, Jesus Christ. I can't believe I just talked about golf for 6 minutes. I don't even have a sponsor. We're still not even talking about whatever this podcast is about. That's insane. I got a couple nice comments, too, over the last month. I tuned in for 3 minutes, and then I tuned out. Yeah, it's because you clicked on a thing that said I was talking about gross domestic product, and instead he got me screaming about the Philadelphia train stations, and it's the same thing about golf today. And now we're going on 7 minutes, and I'm still not talking about what this podcast is about, which, by the way, is Uber. After I got done with my landscaping job on the golf course, I got done and I went to the clubhouse, which is a golf term for bar, where guys who don't know how to golf go and chug 16 Coors Lights before they have to go home to their household domesticated life that they loathe. So true, isn't it? A bunch of guys sitting around. Everybody's got $300 worth of Callaway golf wear on. Nobody in the entire clubhouse shot under 100. Everybody's sitting around trying to trade golf tips. Keep your elbows in. Yeah, go fuck yourself, all right? How many beers have you had? 15? Guy can't even sit in his chair. He's drooling on himself. This is the guy that's going to give me the tip that's going to change my municipal course golf career? I don't think so, buddy. Anyways, I'm at the golf clubhouse. Another code word on the golf course for those of you, if your husband's a golfer, if you're a woman, you're listening to this, another thing's the pro shop. Where were you? I was hanging out at the pro shop. I was discussing strategies with the golf pro. That's code for drinking 16 Jack Daniels Manhattans in a row and then sexually harassing the female waitstaff before being escorted out the front door. Oh, I'm so right. I'm so right. You guys want to take exception with that, but anybody who's been to a golf clubhouse knows exactly what I'm talking about. Anyways, I'm sitting at the bar surrounded by PGA professionals, and I look down at my phone and my Twitter alert has come up. CNBC now has tweeted that Uber CEO on IPO plans. Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi, I may have actually said that right the first time, says the company is on track for a 2019 IPO. Oh, I can't wait. Maybe if we start running headlines about it now, we'll have something to talk about every day until they go public. And here were the bullet points to the story. Uber's CEO told CNBC that the ride-hailing company is on track to go public in 2019. The company is in a, quote, good position in terms of the company's profile, profitability, and margins, he told CNBC's Carl Quintanilla at the Code conference. The CEO also confirmed that his company held talks with legendary investor Warren Buffett and his firm Berkshire Hathaway. Let's just address these things real quick. So earlier I tweeted out a link to the podcast they did about Spotify going public. And that award-winning podcast, well, it actually hasn't won an award, but I'm anticipating it winning awards at some point in the near future. That soon-to-be award-winning podcast was entitled the following: Spotify and Other IPOs. You're not getting in early, you're holding someone else's bag of shit. Congratulations. I didn't actually put congratulations on there, but that's how I feel. Congratulations. There's been 16 rounds of investors before you, and now you have the honor of, quote-unquote, getting in early. Isn't that exciting? And I feel the same way about Uber. I mean, fuck, for the last, 3 years, all I have heard is one hedge fund manager after the other telling me that they're being shopped blocks of Uber equity at a discount to the last round of financing. And I don't know the specifics, so I'm not going to try and act like I do. All I know is that I've talked to a couple individual people who have both told me the same thing, which is they got offered blocks at a discount to the last series of financing. What that means, if you don't know anything about IPOs, is when a company is private before it goes public, it has financing rounds. All that means is injections of money from investors that want to help a company as it's private and usually unprofitable. And every time something like that happens, they're trying to nibble up a piece of the company's equity. They're trying to buy an ownership stake in the company. And ostensibly what is supposed to happen, if everything goes according to plan, is that every subsequent round of investment that comes in before a company goes public is supposed to value the company at a higher valuation than the previous one. So the early investors in Uber, and I'm just making this up just for an example, but the early investors may have invested for a 10% stake in the company at $1 million, and that would value the company at $10 million. And then you want the next round of investors to come in and invest $5 million for another 10% stake in the company, and that values the total company at $50 million. So the guys that participated in the first round for $1 million to get 10% of the equity have now seen their equity appreciate five times because somebody else is paying $5 million for 10% of the equity, and so on and so forth. And these private companies go through several rounds of financing, several rounds of investment. They're often creatively labeled Series A, Series B, Series C. Do you see the pattern, folks? It's the alphabet. I know, it's just absolutely riveting. But anyways, in the case of IPOs, what you're doing is, once you have Series A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and all the way through the alphabet, and then like an Excel spreadsheet, you start getting on Series A, A, B, B, C, C, D, D, and the fucking thing just keeps going. All these people, from the seed investors, from some schmuck that put in $20 for 1% of the company, all the way up to the people that participate in financings like Betsy DeVos, who got smoked on her Theranos investment. Couldn't see that coming, could you, Betsy? Can't believe that. You seem like an intellectual heavyweight. Regardless, all the way up to that round of financing, all those people, all hope, including the founders of the company who usually hold a majority of the equity, all hope to turn around and then shovel this pile of shit onto the public markets at the most robust valuation possible, where they have created a prospectus and created an image and taken a company that is at peak popularity and peak everything and IPO it at a valuation that is generally ridiculous. And then even though they set a ridiculous price for the valuation, there's always that morning when it IPOs and you get CNBC tweeting you updates every 3 seconds. Well, Spotify indicated at 150. Spotify's indicated at 155. Spotify's indicated at 160. This is unbelievable. The demand is unbelievable for Spotify's IPO. Nobody cares that it's pushing the valuation of this company, which is literally taking cash and lighting it on fire as a business model. Nobody cares that the valuation is $5 billion, $10 billion. Nobody cares. People that are reading CNBC and they're like, well, I better get in early. They don't know what an enterprise value is. Okay, look, I'm sure I'll get one email from that. I participated and I know what an enterprise value is. Yeah, well, go fuck yourself, all right? How do you like that? I'm making a generalization, all right? That's what I do best, so let me be an expert at that. The point is, folks, this Uber IPO is nothing to get excited about, yet everybody's getting excited about it. It's already becoming a headline. The fucking thing isn't happening for another 18 months, probably. And already, we're getting these articles just starting to stir up that little first bit of investor interest. You know, Do you have $100 laying in your couch cushion somewhere? Could you be one person that comes out and buys one share of Uber at a $15 trillion valuation that it's going to IPO at, despite the fact that it isn't profitable? Because we need you. We got to stir up the masses. Uber is targeting to go public in late 2019, but the company has not started interviewing banks yet, according to a person familiar with the matter. Well, you might want to get on that. That's usually at least a 12-month process. I think the process goes something like this if you're a private company. You have to show top-line growth at any cost possible. Doesn't matter what your bottom line looks like or what anything else looks like. As long as your top line is going up, nobody really asks any questions. It really doesn't matter. You could be going out and acquiring the last remaining Blockbuster video stores, of which I think there's like six worldwide, at a 50 multiple. And as long as your revenue line is growing, you've got yourself enough for a prospectus. You take that dung heap and you throw it into a wheelbarrow, and you roll it down Fifth Avenue into the offices of some investment bank, and you say, "Hey, I've got a revolutionary company here. It's Dung Heap Incorporated. Yeah, we've got an app too, the iDung. You can find the closest dung heap to wherever it is you are. It's a revolutionary technology. Everybody needs to have it." And you roll that steamer in through the gold-plated rotating door at some investment bank in Manhattan. And you sit down with a bunch of bankers, like the Steve Madden IPO scene in The Wolf of Wall Street. "I just want you opening up people's mouths and shoving stock down it by any means possible." And you say to these people, "Hey, why don't you round up Fucky Fuck, your securities lawyer, and we'll put together a prospectus. Sure, we'll have to include the financials, unfortunately, but around that, we're going to insert a sugary cream filling called Management's Discussion and Analysis and Business Overview." Man, if you are a talented bullshitter, those sections are your bread and butter right there. Because you can't really bullshit the financials, even though now you kind of can. This non-GAAP, by the way, I love this. Non-GAAP. Everything's reported in non-GAAP. Non-GAAP financials, non-GAAP revenue, non-GAAP profit, non-GAAP cash flow. You know what non-GAAP cash flow is? It's just anything. Do you know what non-GAAP is? When you see something on CNBC and it says 3M turns a profit, adjusted EPS of $1.68. That might as well be $10 or a $5 loss. Adjusted. Either we're going to have... The whole point of generally accepted accounting principles was that they were generally accepted. Accounting principles. So we didn't have to fucking ask. We knew that if you reported your revenue, your cost of goods sold, your net income, your gross margins, whatever, everybody was kind of playing by the same playbook. So we knew either a profit was a profit and a loss was a loss. But these non-GAAP earnings now, well, we added back one-time charges that we think will help give investors a better view of our financial performance. It's like, listen, asshole, you want to give investors a better view of financial performance? Why don't you just tell them what the fuck you did for the quarter? Why don't you just tell them? Yeah, we lost $50 million this quarter. It is what it is, folks. Sometimes companies have bumps in the road. It's normal. Sometimes you have a great quarter, sometimes you have a shit quarter. Look at the Weinstein Company. They just went bankrupt. They didn't take the costs that were going to be pushed onto the company from Harvey Weinstein's transgressions and add them back into earnings. we know that we were a billion-dollar company yesterday and that technically Goldman Sachs wrote down their entire investment in the company to zero, but we still feel like we're worth $1 billion. So if you look at our valuation chart here, what we've done is we've done an ad back here. This is called the CEO jerking off into a ficus ad back. It's a technical term. We couldn't find anything in the generally accepted accounting principles having to do with it, so we just decided to add it back. We figured this could give you a better idea of the business. No! Okay? It doesn't. Sometimes the CEO just gets caught jerking off in a ficus, and it sends the whole company down the shitter. You can't do that. That's called failing at business. There's no ad back. There's no nothing. You know? You just fucked it up, and now it's a zero. It's like Theranos. They're not going and adding back. Well, if we had, if this report hadn't come out, we'd still be worth $9 billion. Let's just tack that back on. Our non-GAAP valuation is $9 billion. Yeah. But in the real world, your company is worth about the same as the Roseanne Barr show right now. I love, too, this idiot goes on Twitter after she comes out and says this stupid thing, and then ABC cancels her show. She comes back onto Twitter and says, please help me get followers. It's like, what are you, fucking high? Like, did you or did you not just come out and say something completely ridiculous that just cost you your television show and your syndication and all that stuff? And you think to yourself, this would be a great time to go out and solicit followers for my Twitter account. That's like Keynesian theory for doing dumb shit. Like, yeah, well, maybe if I just keep going and I just get more followers, it gives me a chance to have a larger forum going forward, then things will just turn around. It's like, no, you fucked up. So now you don't get any more followers. Now you need to take, like, another 30 years off. And if you're still alive 30 years from now, we'll let you come back and do the reboot again. You and John Goodman wheeling yourselves around an elderly person's home, whatever. Talking to inanimate objects. Jesus, I'm way off track here. I really am. The point is, look, Uber's financials were leaked by the Wall Street Journal, or they were leaked to the Wall Street Journal some time back. And the Wall Street Journal published them. Okay? The company's adjusted EBITDA, okay, and that's adjusted. The word adjusted, by the way, is financial for we just fucking did whatever we want with it. That's what that means. Here's a nice class on non-GAAP accounting for you. Non-GAAP means anything goes, like I just said. Anything. It would be like me saying, here's a non-GAAP $10 bill. It could be worth enough to buy me a cup of coffee. It could be worth enough to buy me a banana. Or it could be worth enough to buy me 15 acres of real estate in South Sudan. Nobody knows because it's non-GAAP. Meaning the closed system parameters that we had that was supposed to create some organization around the value here, we just took those and threw those out the window. We don't need those. We're running a taxi service here, okay, folks? This is revolutionary. We've got a recurring revenue model. Can't be bothered with your thoughts on what reality is. We're somewhere else. I don't know where we are. We're in that asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter somewhere. That's where we're operating. Anyways, they posted their financials. They had adjusted EBITDA of negative $312 million for the quarter. Let's have a nice round of applause for that. That's just fantastic. I don't really know how else to describe it. Let's look at the old cash flow statement here. Oh, I love this. Net cash used in operating activities. This quarter, minus $277 million. Just take that money and light it on fire. Get one of those little blow torches that they used, like in Home Alone, where the guy opens the door and the fucking thing blows his head, Joe Pesci. It burns a hole right through the top of his woolly hat, and causes him to go bald. You want to get yourself a blowtorch like that, folks. It's much easier to burn your cash with something like that. Then you need to go get yourself $277 million, set that on fire. We'll call that Q1, okay? Congratulations. In Q4 of 2017, the company set on fire $160 million, according to the cash flow statement that I'm looking at. It's a little bit less, so you may want to use the same torch, but dial it down a little bit. The quarter prior to that, the quarter ending September 30th, 2017, this is a good one, folks. The company set fire to $384 million. For that, you're going to want to get yourself a Boring Company flamethrower. Set that son of a bitch on high. And just have at that stack of cash. Now, look. I know there's a lot of people out there that are going to be like, well, listen, you can't just expect a company to go out there and start earning cash right away. It's just completely unreasonable. There's got to be a runway, a trajectory for growth. Amazon did it. Everybody did it. Blah, 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 blah. Look, I get your advice, all right? And I have a rebuttal. You want to hear it? MyPillow. Now, I've never seen that company's financials, but I guarantee you that motherfucker started making a profit the first year he started selling those things. That's a business, all right? This guy goes and makes a pillow, which is something that everybody uses every day. He manufactures it probably the exact same way that every pillow has ever been manufactured. Here comes another group of emails. I get, well, it's a very different. There's a ergonomic for your neck. It helps your spine. You know what? Just save it with those emails because I'm not even going to read them. Anyways, this guy goes out and he makes a pillow. What could be more fucking basic than going out and making a pillow? And what does he call it? Does he go to some focus group, get some super flashy name? Ultra Pillow, you know, or the super ergonomic pillow, or Pillowtron 3000, the future of sleep. None of that shit. No focus groups, no marketing budget, no nothing. That guy looked at this pillow that he made for 12 cents and he said, we're going to call it My Pillow because it's my pillow. And he cranked a couple of those things out for probably 9 cents each. And he turned around and he's selling them for $29.95. with some trumped up bullshit marketing speech, you know? It's the best night's sleep I ever got. I don't trust that guy. You ever see the look in his eyes when he's doing those commercials? Looks like he's on a couple Ambien at the time. Looks like the kind of guy that mixes uppers with downers. He's there in those commercials. He's clearly talking, but it looks like behind the scenes something's not working. Maybe he's on the Roseanne Barr Ambien sleep schedule, which basically is you take an Ambien, you go on Twitter, you make a racist comment, you ruin your career, which has been in hibernation for 30 years, everything goes horrible, you blame it on the Ambien, then you ask for more Twitter followers. Maybe that's what he's doing. But anyways, this guy goes out and starts selling a shitload of these pillows, and the guy is crushing it. Crushing it. The guy's crushing it. I mean, have you seen the guy on television? I mean, personally, I wouldn't buy a fucking pack of gum from the guy, but that doesn't matter. He's out there selling this shit out of these pillows, and I guarantee you, if you get My Pillow's legacy financials going back 10 years, that this was a profitable company when it started, and it was generating cash when it started, and it was a great business, so there's no need to take it public. You know why? Because that guy, that goofy fucking guy, is on a boat right now with a bunch of Eastern European supermodels living it up. Because MyPillow, which to this guy's credit was a great invention and a great piece of marketing and a great price point, and he's really got a great audience, doesn't he? You air those infomercials at 2:15 in the morning on a Tuesday. You've really got some high-caliber individuals that you're pitching that thing to. He's got it in stores. He's got it here. He's got it there. It's a money-back guarantee. It's made in the USA. This dude's just killing it. This guy should be Entrepreneur of the Year. And did at any point this guy say to himself, I should take this company public? Some bankers probably came to the door. Excuse me, fucking John, whatever your name is. We took a look at your financials here. And whatever, his name's probably Pete. He looks like a Pete. Anyways, hey, Pete, we notice you're doing very well with MyPillow. You want to take this thing public? He's probably like, no. Why the fuck would I want to take this public? We're making pillows for 50 cents and selling them for $29.95. And 85% of that goes directly into my pocket. Goes from my pillow to my pocket. I've got it all figured out. Why would I want to start introducing securities lawyers and annual filings, and all of a sudden I got to start disclosing things? I got to start talking about the $50 some guy lent me. I got to bring in a board of directors. I got to deal with bankers. The fuck out of here. I got this formula nailed. You kidding me? I show up every day. I got a group of people working for 19 cents an hour. They're manufacturing pillows. I turn around, I sell them for $29.95, and I'm making a shitload of money, and people keep buying them. These things have been around for like 8 years. This guy's still on TV. My pillow just sold its 50 millionth pillow. We don't even have that many people in the United States. People are buying 2, 3, 4 of them. We're buying them as gifts. Baby showers, weddings, Hanukkah, Christmas. Everybody gets a pillow. There's no part of going public that's appealing to this guy. Why do you go public? You go public because you have a bunch of investors that need to exit. And yes, some companies, look, Facebook, Google, Amazon, Apple, all of these companies have done very well, and they're all cash-generating companies. The thing used to be that you would be on the precipice of becoming cash flow positive, so you would turn around and go public at that point, or you were already a cash flow-generating company. I can't even tell you the last time I looked at a prospectus and a company was generating cash before it went public. Does it even exist? Have you seen a prospectus from a company that's generating a lot of cash and that cash that they're generating is growing? You'd have better luck trying to find the goddamn Loch Ness Monster. But here we go. The headline for Uber the last couple of months has been, they're burning through cash. Are they going to find a way to profitability? Will they make it? Who knows? We'll find out once they're public. And the retail shareholders are bearing the brunt of the liability as opposed to the... Or do you think the MyPillow guy had an early round investor? I guarantee you he had one round of financing and he like took out a $20,000 home equity loan to start his business. Or he turned around and asked his brother, who's Dale. Hey, Dale, can I borrow $20,000? I want to start a pillow company. Probably got some 15-minute runaround before Dale reluctantly forked over the $20,000. Well, I'll tell you, last time I cut you a check, start that business where you're going to make bowling balls from scratch. Ain't nothing happened with that money. I'll give you $20,000, but I ain't giving you a nickel more than that. That's my lottery money, too. Make sure I get that back at some point. And this guy turned around, and all of a sudden, bang. He's sitting on a $50 billion pillow enterprise. You got to give the guy credit. I guarantee you his financials stack up better than Uber's. So I know 2019 is a long way away, and I'm kind of jumping the gun here, giving Uber a bunch of shit. They're not even going public anytime soon. Maybe I'm jumping the gun a little bit. Maybe I'm a little too jaded. Maybe I'm overdoing it. But just save it, okay? Save it. I don't need to know what their IPO plans are. Let me know a day before the IPO happens what the symbol will be. And then let me know when puts are going to start trading. And that's it. Everything else you can keep to yourself. Unless the company tears off 3/4 of profitability somehow, then you can write an article about that. Otherwise, folks, I'm telling you, you better get ready. This is just the beginning. I mean, I know people have been talking about the Uber IPO forever. And just like all the other tech IPOs, they talk about it and talk about it and talk about it until it happens. And then when it happens, they get a big boner about it on CNBC. They talk about it all day. And then 2 weeks later, after the stock sheds 35% of its value, they always have some guy on doing some type of an apology tour. Well, this is very common. This is very common in a company as large as this. They'll give the insiders a point to exit. There's a trajectory to growth, and there was a lockup, but I still feel like the long-term targets are in place. Oh. GoPro, $94, or whatever the hell it was at, $84, down to $3. Have a nice day. Thank you very much for participating. Blue Apron, hi, we're down 60% from the IPO. Thank you. Snapchat, same deal. Whatever, just get it out there. Get it freely trading. I don't care. Pandora Music Company. Hey, Apple and Google are going to be competing. Nobody cares. Take it public. Great. $47 a share. Now it's 3, 7, 12, whatever. It doesn't matter. You lost money if you bought it pretty much at any time. Zynga. This was a great one. Hey, we've got Farmville, and we're going to IPO on the basis that we're going to create Farmville 2. So we have an app that works only with Facebook that annoys the fuck out of everybody. And that nobody really uses, but somehow it exists, and we're getting active users off of it. We're just going to take this whole company public. We're going to base the whole company on Farmville 2. Well, after that comes out, we don't know what we're going to do. Thank you very much. Stock goes from 12 to 2. Have a nice day. I mean, these IPOs are out there, and this is what happens to them. They just get curb stomped, and Uber probably won't be any different. I can't take it, folks. Stop freaking out and worshiping every IPO. Read the prospectus. Look at the numbers. And then look behind the numbers. And then still don't invest in it. Don't buy it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm the counterbalance to the mainstream media. It doesn't even matter what it is. The more that CNBC pumps it up, the more I'm going to tell you you shouldn't buy it. Because there needs to be a counterbalance. Otherwise, we just have this big, you know, long bias circle jerk. I mean, have you ever seen anything go public that was reported on CNBC where they said, maybe you should take a note of caution here, Bill. Maybe we should just lay off this one. It's not how it works. Every mainstream media source just pushes every IPO that's a big major IPO. Nobody ever comes out and says, why don't we hold off on this, Bill? It never happens. But it's happening now on this podcast. That was your dose of reality for the evening. I'm sorry I talked about golf for 7 minutes, but I can't help myself, all right? I got a problem. I get angry, and then I just start talking about whatever. And if you just happen to pop in there at the right time, you're going to get 7 minutes of golf, folks. I don't know what to tell you. You want to sign up for something predictable? Go read Jeremy Siegel's latest book with the expectation that he's going to tell you that the stock market's going to go up. That's very predictable. There you go. That'll be a nice, comfortable read for you. With that being said, I got to knock it off before I give myself an aneurysm. That's how you know the podcast has come to an end. This is a great time to remind you that this is not investment advice, and that 7 years ago, I was serving beer in an Irish pub for a living. And I can still pour a great Guinness. So if you catch me in the right place at the right time, you might find out for yourself firsthand. I'd love to buy you a drink. I'd love to pour you one. All right, with that being said, I am ready to get out of here for the evening. I will be back tomorrow. I got Scott Wapner coming on. He's going to talk about his new book, and we'll talk some Herbalife, and we'll see what it'll be like talking to Scott on the record for the first time ever. I am super stoked for it. Should be a great podcast. I sped read his book tonight in about 45 minutes, so I feel adequately prepared for my interview tomorrow. Whatever. I know the story inside and out. I can't wait to hear what Judge thinks about a bunch of things. So catch that tomorrow. Sincerely, I hope you guys have a great night tonight and a good morning on Thursday. Peace!